order, and we'll, just for a little bit of change of pace, we'll change the order. The first bill we'll hear is 2811, and John, you want to give us a little summary?
Mr. Chair, committee members, this is a bill introduced by Representative Olson, which would prohibit certain types of display devices like a DVD player or something of the like to be actively in operation in a car that is in operation on the highway if it is located in a manner in which the driver can either see it or it's located in front of the back of the driver's side seat.
Thank you, John. Representative Olson, welcome.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Andy Olson, and I'm a representative representing House District 15, which is Albany and part of Benton County. But I'm just here to share a little bit about House Bill 2811 and urging you for my support, for my perspective on it and everything. I spent 29 years with the Oregon State Police and retired nearly 2 years ago from there, and started out at the Albany office back in 1974. At that time, we did not have a statute that governed what House Bill 2811 has right now. It was implemented in the early 1980s. Boy, that sounds old. But anyways, I just want to point out to you, I think you've probably had a chance to look at the Motor Vehicle Code. It's grown a lot since 1974, I can tell you that. But here specifically, ORS 815-240, which I've highlighted here for you, is the piece that we're interested in. It was a great statute when it came on board. I can tell you that there's a number of times that traveling down the freeway, or even as I was stationed out of the Klamath Falls office on 97, it was nice to have a statute that dealt with folks that you suspected might be an erratic driver involving driving under the influence, that type of thing, and then come to find out that actually what they were doing was watching the TV up front alongside of them. I mean, where they were not able to give total attention to their driving ability. That's what the statute's all about, and legislation saw that as an issue that needed to be addressed back in the early 80s. Well, there's a lot of technology that has occurred since. And I know that Mark Landauer and also two members from the Portland Police Bureau are going to be here and going to go a lot more detail than I would for this to kind of support this bill. But I just want to share also some of the technology that we're facing today that actually is not identified in this statute, ORS 815-240. This last summer, I had the opportunity down in Albany to sit in a car show. And this one young teenager came in with his hot rod, and it was a lowrider. He had these great big giant boom boxes in the trunk. And I was just kind of curious to see, you know, what it would do and everything. So I asked him, I said, well, gosh, what do you have there? And he says, well, what would you like to listen to? I didn't want to listen to ZZ Top or anything like that, but that's what he had. So we got to listen to that, and it shook every building for about the, you know, four-block area where we were at. Then he inserts this screen that was about 6x6 into the disc player, and actually, in front of him, in front of where the steering wheel would be located as you're a driver, he had a little audio and also visual tape going on. And I had never seen anything like that before. So that's just a description of the technology that we're having, and this House bill identifies some of those issues. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
You're off easy. Thank you. Mark, come on up.
Thank Welcome. Thank you, Chair Gilman, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landau. I'm with the Office of Government Relations for the City of Portland. Thank you very much for scheduling this bill. And the purpose of House Bill 2811 is to essentially modernize the intent and spirit of the existing law for which Representative Olson was referring to. ORS 815-240 currently makes it a Class B traffic violation for a person to use television, as your committee administrator described, that is viewable to a driver and is forward of the back of the driver's seat. The issue here is obviously distracted driving. It's obviously incumbent for a driver to know where they're going, and we're hopeful that we can continue to encourage drivers to be watching where they're driving. The problem is, though, that there are now many forms of, as the term we're using, image display devices that can be used for purely entertainment purposes that do not really fit into the current statute. Currently, an officer who drives or sees a driver watching, for example, a portable DVD player, I'm sure you have all seen them before, they've become much more common, while driving down a highway is essentially powerless to pull that driver over if that driver is obeying all the existing laws that apply in that situation. Furthermore, for an officer to cite an individual under, for example, careless driving or reckless driving, the officer must wait for that careless or reckless act to occur. What this bill attempts to do is to prohibit this type of dangerous behavior and would permit an officer to pull over a driver and possibly cite that driver before that reckless or careless act actually occurs. We've attempted to be very careful with the bill and limit its application to screens that really can only be used for entertainment purposes. The bill would exempt, for example, image display devices that are related to the navigation operation of the vehicle, the operation of a radio or sound system or other systems of that vehicle. The bill also would exempt an image display device that image display devices that are used to establish or manage communications on a telephone or radio. We've also submitted a Dash 5 amendment for your consideration. That amendment goes beyond the existing exemptions that are currently built into the bill. Those exemptions would include an image display device that assists a driver in maneuvering the vehicle. That's particularly devised, for example, RVs. Many RVs have cameras in the back or on the sides that assist the driver knowing what is around them so that they can maneuver the vehicle. The exemptions would also, obviously, we won't want this to apply to an emergency vehicle. Many emergency vehicles do have these types of screens for officers, firemen, etc. The exemptions would also exempt televisions or image display devices that are viewable to a driver in an RV that has an interlock system. Many of the floor plans, I've spoken to the RV manufacturers and their representative, they have interlock systems, so as soon as that car or that key goes on for the ignition, a circuit is broken so that that screen no longer can function. So we wanted to exempt that as well. And then finally, we wanted to exempt businesses, commercial vehicles, and commercial motor vehicles, as well as personal data administrators. Some may wonder, why do we need to put this into law when many would consider this to be just simple common sense? Well, the fact of the matter is, the simple answer is that not everyone driving on our roadways is, you know, doing or conducting themselves in a way that one would think is common sense. Unfortunately, the police currently are powerless to do anything about this situation. We would hope that you look favorably upon the bill. I've asked Lieutenant Vince Jarmer from the Portland Traffic Bureau to come in and talk to you a little bit more in detail about the bill, and we thank you again for hearing this.
You're welcome. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I just want to tell you that I'm in support of the amendment here, I guess for what Mark has referred to as common sense ideas, but also from the standpoint that I think that it's time that we update it a little bit to more accurately reflect current standards that we have. We have satellite TVs, and we have portable DVD players that are very affordable, and we have laptop computers that can play movies. And in 1983, if that was when this original bill was enacted, we didn't have any of those technologies that are available now. And these things can just be set right on your seat next to you, and you can plug it into your cigarette lighter, and you can watch the third version of Star Wars if you so desire to. I just want to go over a few things that Mark has said and kind of reiterate from a law enforcement perspective those things. Again, it's updating the current law, and it continues to allow, and we're not creating anything new here, it just continues to allow officers to be a little bit more preemptive. In other words, let's not wait for the accident to occur. If we can see the glow of the machine as they're watching a movie on their seat next to them inside the car and they're driving down the highway, you can kind of spot that. You can see the changing images and the changing lighting conditions so that you know something's going on in the seat, and that's going to provide a distraction for somebody that's driving and should be paying attention to the roadway. With a television screen, of course, in 1983, you could have recognized that as well. But now with this the extra couple pieces of technology that are available now, we would just like to update the language a little bit into the law. What it does allow, this amendment allows us to have the reasonable suspicion that it takes to stop somebody and talk to them about their driving habits and the distraction that they're experiencing while they're trying to watch a movie and drive on the street. So the law, this amendment will just continue to allow officers to have that suspicion or reasonableness to talk to them about it. Don't even really have to write them a citation, but it also gives them an authority to tell them to turn it off and not drive that way, which I think is critical as well. Right now, we don't have that authority, and I think that it's something that's maybe a common sense idea again, but a lot of people don't use common sense when they're driving, in my experience. When we're enforcing traffic laws like on Broadway in Portland, which is kind of a microcosm of traffic throughout the state, but it's fairly representative in some other major metropolitan areas. Broadway on Friday and Saturday nights during the summertime gets pretty crazy. We have a lot of kids come down there. A lot of kids put a lot of money into their cars in the sound system that the representative was talking about earlier. They also put video equipment in there because why go to the movies when you can bring the movie with you? And you can be with your friends on Southwest Broadway in the middle of the night. We've had that experience on occasion to see pretty much a mobile video theater going on in some of these kids' cars. And what I'm particularly concerned about is that these kids don't have, they may have the driver's license that it takes to drive on the road, but they don't really have the common sense or the experience or the long-standing knowledge that it takes to understand the consequences for their action. And quite frankly, this technology is very affordable right now. Anybody can buy a portable DVD player. And even when they shouldn't be watching it, they may be. So when there is no other particular reason to stop them, this law and this amendment will allow the officer to stop them and at least talk to them about driving unobstructed or undistracted, and I think it's a direction that we ought to go in. And I thank the committee's time for letting me talk a little bit here.
I might add that I did submit an article for your review discussing a case that did occur up in Alaska a couple years back, just to demonstrate that this is an occurrence that is out there. Frankly and thankfully, it hasn't occurred in or resulted in a death, to my knowledge, on any of the highways in the state of Oregon. But frankly, it's probably only a matter of time.
Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I actually have a host of questions, as Mr. Landau was probably anticipating. I may proceed. First, I want to say, for the record, I am absolutely opposed to people driving while watching a TV. This is, I agree with the concept, but how I see laws be implemented sometimes makes me wonder. It just seems like sometimes they're just carried to the extreme, and I don't want people who were really just minding their own business and not doing viewing this equipment on the road being caught in the web. And so on your proposed amendment, dash 5 amendment, on line 6, you exempted, let's see, how does it fit in? Line 18. Okay. An offense is not committed in this section if the image display device is, okay, and one of them is used to facilitate the business use of a commercial vehicle or a commercial motor vehicle. How would you determine what a commercial vehicle is? Because not all vehicles used for business purposes are apparently labeled.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, you did raise that issue with me, and I thank you for the question. Your question is very valid, and as the current amendment is drafted, you may have an instance where, for example, a privately owned vehicle that is being used for commercial purposes, let's just say, for example, a contractor who's driving from job to job, may slip through the cracks, and actually this law would apply to them. I would just simply respond, we're going to have to, you know, work to try to get that problem addressed. It's a very fair question. I don't have a response, at least in the term of we don't want this to apply to somebody who's trying to operate their vehicle using an image display device and using that device for commercial purposes, even if it's a privately owned vehicle. That's not our intent here. Our intent is really to be getting after people in privately owned vehicles that are using these screens for entertainment purposes. So it would certainly be my hope if the committee chooses to move this bill along or hold it for some clarifying language on that, we would welcome working with you or the committee to get that specific problem addressed.
Follow up, Mr.
Further
Chair?
Questions? Yes, certainly.
Could we look at saying in the bill somewhere that it's you shouldn't be using image display devices primarily used for entertainment or educational purposes or for long-term viewing purposes or something to that effect? And that would just go to the heart of it rather than...
Chair Gilman, Representative Thatcher, again, thank you for the question. It's a very fair question, and something that we struggled with when we began looking at this issue. We began going down the road of how do we prohibit entertainment screens. The problem was that we ran into defining entertainment. One's entertainment for some person may not be entertainment for another person, and so trying to define that was rather a thorny issue, if I may say. So we decided to sort of back up and just list, regrettably, you know, a host of exemptions in order to try to thread what became a very fine eye and a needle. So that's where we stand today. If you have suggestions on defining entertainment, we would certainly welcome them, but I think you might find that it might be a little bit of a thorny issue.
Further questions?
More. I'll try to limit it. Sorry. I actually have a lot more. But when he was officer was testifying to the times he's seen people drive down the road with apparently a screen glowing. How do you know? I mean, how would you know if there was a passenger and they did have some sort of a device to block it off? How would you know it wasn't in compliance with this proposed law?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Thatcher, the idea, I guess, is what we'll have to do is apply the reasonable standard. How would you know? Well, if there was a single person in the car and this glowing thing was going on, mm-hmm. That would be one way. The amendment allows for the stop if we, during the investigation, you find out that it's segregated enough so the driver isn't viewing it and it's just the passenger that's viewing it, or... you know, some sort of reasonable explanation comes about, somebody sitting in the back seat. I think the investigation would reveal that to the point where it wouldn't be citable, but it still would be stoppable, I guess, for the investigation.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Representative Boone.
I just had a question about how it affects those maps. Like, there's
a
road with a friend of a new Volvo, and it had a little MapQuest type map.
Chair Gilman, Representative Boone, thank you for the question. If you'll look in the bill as printed on line 16, I believe, one of the exemptions that's built into the bill would exempt an image display device that's related to the navigation of the motor vehicle. So we have built in to the bill an exemption that would allow for drivers to be viewing, and it's very common these days that GPS systems are built into vehicles to assist the driver to navigate to their various destinations, whatnot. So we have contemplated that issue and have tried to build that exemption into the measure.
It would seem to me that that's not a lot different if you're driving like this and you're trying to look at a map and figure out which way to go next. How does that figure into it?
Is that a question or a...
Well, I guess it's a comment, I think it goes back to the common sense part that you were talking about.
Yeah.
You would hope people would pull over
do
that, but...
Chair Gilman, Representative Boone, again, you've really hit the nail on the head here. This is all about common sense, and really why we have just simply tried to limit this to screens for entertainment purposes. I think that we could all probably agree that we shouldn't be watching a movie while driving down I-5 with a portable DVD player sitting on the dashboard of our screen. Unfortunately, sometimes people simply don't use that common sense, and as a result, because of the dilemma that face officers when confronted with this situation, that's why we've asked for the bill. We don't want to ask for this bill. We would think everybody would use that common sense. Regrettably, they don't.
And just one quickie. I'm sure you've seen it too as a cop. People reading newspapers, books. Going down I-5, I know somebody who read a novel driving from here to Santa Barbara.
Do you want an amendment to this bill?
Well, I was just wondering if that...
And balancing checkbooks, too.
And balancing checkbooks.
Any further questions? Representative...
Let me thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to make sure I'm interpreting a couple, I realize you have to stick with the legalese language, but let me just check my assumption and make sure I'm right that... your intent is to exempt any use of PDAs or of like a BlackBerry or something else that's used for navigational purposes that may not be attached to the vehicle.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hunt, you are correct. If you look at the Dash 5 amendment, I believe we're looking at line 4 of the bill, sub C, that the language states use to manage schedules, contact information, and other personal or business information. And in the printed bill on line, 18, you will see also that there is an exemption built in to manage communications, telephone, or radio. I believe the BlackBerry that you have displayed would be exempted under this bill. And frankly, the argument has been to include PDAs. What is the difference between pulling out a paper calendar versus an image display device used for that purpose to check one's calendar or a telephone number, whatnot? So we built that exemption into the bill, contemplating that discussion.
Any further questions? Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the thing that causes me some concern about this bill is that you're taking language that is very specific. Vehicle television equipment, very specific. And by changing that to an image displaying device, it's now all-inclusive, because unfortunately in today's world, virtually everything we do has some sort of an image device attached to it, whether it's a cell phone, BlackBerry, GPS units, whatever the case may be. So now all of a sudden we're going from a very specific to an all-inclusive, and we're going to write in some exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem that I see is that you're going to have, that it's so subject to interpretation that when you make the stop, as vis-a-vis this article from Alaska, it's going to be very subject to debate. So I guess my question is, why not if the issue is a device that's being used for entertainment, why not change vehicle television equipment to use of any entertainment equipment and leave it at that?
So you couldn't listen to a radio anymore then?
Visual entertainment equipment. I'll amend my amendment.
Thank you, Chair Gilman, for at least partially answering my the question. Representative Burley, interesting notion. I would probably have to look at your suggested language there to see whether or not we're, as I said, threading the needle, so to speak, here. Look, the bottom line is we're trying to simply prohibit this type of behavior. If somebody has a better way to, excuse expression, skin the cat, we're all for it. We're all for it. It's just a matter of trying to get at the issue that faces the officer on the street, trying to prevent a tragedy from happening before it ever occurs. That's the simple intent here. If somebody has a better way to do this, we're all for it.
One more question, Representative Patrick.
Yes, thank you. I'm just wondering, if this law was now in place, how many opportunities would you say you would have had to have pulled somebody over under this if it were in place?
Chairman and Representative Thatcher, it's hard to put a number on that. I don't actually do any of the patrol work. I do things like mostly like this now. But when I was it's actually very, very interesting. I appreciate the opportunity. According to my people that I have spoken to about this, the glaring example is the Broadway, the Southwest Broadway cruising idea. But I can only imagine that on a long, boring stretch of freeway, and you have the availability to have a television in your car that's visible there, according to the old rules, I guess, that, you know, what's to prevent you from snapping it on and catching Johnny Carson when it was on or anything like that? I think of it maybe as a temptation issue or one of those things where as long as you got it, why not use it? So I can answer your question sideways. It probably happens, but I don't know how to tell you or how to quantify how much it happens.
The other problem is that because it's currently not an offense, there's really no way to document the issue. We know it's occurring, but there's, as stated previously, there's no ability for an officer to pull somebody over and actually document and therefore have statistics. I'd love to be able to provide you statistics on the scope of this problem. Regrettably, there aren't any because there's no ability for the officers to pull these individuals over in this instance.
Well, now, you do keep track of accidents. Do you have any accidents that are attributable to this?
We have all kinds of accident statistical information. Unfortunately, we don't capture causal kind of stuff unless we research the individual accident reports themselves. So it would be a monumental amount of work. Other than the fact that it would probably note that it was somebody was obstructed or distracted.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions? I have to make a comment. In the 50s, probably 55, 56, I hauled hay from California, Scott Valley to Medford. And for those of you that are truckers, you know what it's like going up that wonderful mountain coming into Oregon. I think in my old Ford truck, it was about 5 miles an hour. And I wrote love letters to my now wife. And I don't think I was being careless at all. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all I have signed up for 2811. Anyone else for 2811? Close the public hearing. And we'll try to get back to the right direction here. And we'll start with 2609. John, I'll open a public hearing. And John, do you have the summary?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a very simple bill. It would add the eye color of the licensee to the information contained on an Oregon driver's license.
Thank you. And Mike Dewey. No, he's just...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Mike Dewey representing Digimark. Before I proceed with my testimony, sometimes a bill gets a name of some sort of label, and 2811, which you just heard, is now going to be the love letter bill, so I just want to... When people refer to it, you'll know what they're again, Mike Dewey representing Digimark. Digimark is an Oregon company. They provide the driver's license services to 32 of the 50 states and also the District of Columbia, or District of Washington. John Scruggs had introduced this bill, I believe, and this is the third time as a charm for this particular bill, and he's not here, probably working. What I wanted to do is just, we're neutral on the bill. Again, we provide the driver's license contract with DMV. So that's basically the infrastructure, if you will, and the DMV personnel provide all of the local services that you get. What I wanted to do is just put on the record that we believe that the change would be within the scope of the contract that we have presently, which expires, I think, September 1 of 2008. And I do that because there are some additional costs to us in the area of software development. It's basically redesigning the card because you have to have a place to put the eye color on the card, and then you have to do some testing. It's not significant, but there is money involved from our standpoint, and I think that would fall within the parameters of the contract. I put that on the record because there is a bill in the Senate Bill 7640, which deals with fingerprinting and biometrics. And if that bill were to pass, and there is some steam for that bill, I'm not sure what's going to happen, but there was a hearing and a work group, and some R's and D's are interested in putting biometrics and fingerprinting into the system. And from our perspective, that might be outside the scope of the contract. And basically, that would mean that DMV would arguably have to buy out the contract. There would be penalties and the like. But we don't think that's the case here. So we don't have a position. We're in the position of being able to do the work. But if you want to move forward, we're happy to do that particular work so long as we get reimbursed for something that was not contemplated in the original agreement that we signed with DMV. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yes, Representative Burley.
You said this is the third time for this bill. Why? What happened the previous times?
Well, I was being a little bit facetious here. This is a bill that's been on the schedule three times. This is the third time, first time it's had a hearing.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, no. You just... It was other driver's license issues.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I swear they used to do this, didn't they?
Yes, I did. Mr. Chair and Representative Thatcher, at one point in time it was on the driver's license. The person I work with who has a good history with driver's licenses throughout the world kind of thought that what happened is that when people started wearing contacts, and you could change the eye color with contacts, if you wanted green or whatever, you could do that. So perhaps that was the reason that it was taken from the driver's license. I mean, Mr. Scruggs, if he were here, could tell you why he thinks it's important, but that's not my job.
Follow up.
Maybe this question isn't for you then, but who's the color judged by? For instance, my husband has eyes that clearly are blue in some light and green in other lights, and my daughter's eyes have been described as anywhere from brown to hazel to green. So I'm just wondering who judges.
Mr. Chair and Representative Thatcher, my assumption is the first thing you do is you write down what is your eye color. And I guess if you want it to be brown and it's blue, you probably don't put down brown, but nonetheless, I suspect there's a little bit more that goes into it. You do have somebody from the department here that probably could talk about that. I don't even know if they've thought about that at this point in time.
Further question? Ms. Burley.
Well, I don't know if somebody else following you is going to answer this question. If you can, but I'm trying to figure out why do this? What's the purpose of it?
Yeah, may I?
Yeah.
I was going to ask.
Do you want me to go up?
And for the record, his eye color is
blue-gray.
For the record, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Scott Bruin. This bill, as was already mentioned by Mike, comes to us through John Scruggs on my behalf. He came to me with this bill, and a couple others explained this to me. And it's not a hugely complex reason why he wanted to do this bill and why I agreed to support this. It's basically one small tool. It's certainly not any sort of final answer, but it's one small tool toward helping law enforcement get a better handle and better grasp of IDing folks. The issue was brought up regarding the contact cycle. I brought that issue up with Mr. Scruggs as well, and his answer was that sure, anybody can do that, anybody can fool the system, but this is just, and once again, that's why this bill is not particularly, having NICLA, and there's not particularly any sort of panacea towards law enforcement and helping them with identification. It's just one more tool, one that we used to have, as John related to me, and one that was dropped for, I don't know the reason why it was dropped. It's just to give law enforcement one more tool. It's especially, he brought this to my attention, and I remember back in my college days that this, where this could be important. He made especially with the discussions we've had with our committee, we've spent a lot of time talking about sort of the extreme cases for the needs for ID when it comes to combating terrorism, if you will. But if we roll that back and sort of get that more of the day-to-day, more of the day-to-day occurrences, John brought to my attention and reminded me of our college days and how easy it was to pass off fake ID or to get fake ID during college days or get real ID based on false standing, if you will, find somebody's birth certificate, whether it's a brother or a fraternity brother or a friend or something like that, and go in and get ID. And John just said, if you're doing that or you're passing false ID, having eye color gives the person sitting in the front of the bar one more tool to help ID the person that's coming in that might not be 21.
Further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else testify on 2609? Close the hearing.
Yeah.
And open a hearing on 2830. John?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a bill that would require participants in a state, county, or city adopt a highway program to pay all the costs associated with their participation, appear in person at any public meetings at which their application will be discussed, have their identities provided to the news media, and have actually removed litter from the affected section of highway on at least two occasions. The genesis of this bill was a situation that arose in Marion County where the American Nazi Party attempted to participate in the Adopt a Highway program, and it was unclear at the time as to exactly who the individual or group of individuals was that was seeking this designation.
Thanks, John. Sean Zachlin.
Welcome. Appreciate it. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm John Jackley with the Highway Division at ODOT. I have green eyes. We appreciate the opportunity to testify today. The department does understand the context in which this bill was introduced, and we're not opposed to the bill. We do have some concerns about some potential unintended consequences of some of the provisions, and that's what I'd like to discuss just briefly with you today. Our Adopt the Highway program, this is for the rights of way on state highways, has been a successful tool for citizen involvement for many years. Thousands of individuals, businesses, and civic groups have participated, and they've made major contributions to beautifying and cleaning state roadsides by picking up the trash. We have two main parts of this. Adopt the Highway is one, and then we have a youth litter program which does the rest of it. The Adopt a Highway program covers about 1,200 miles at the cost of about $194 a mile. The Youth Litter Patrol, which covers the other 6,400 miles of state highways, costs about 466 miles because it's paid, and so the costs are necessarily higher. So you get an awful lot of bang for the buck from our Adopt a Highway program. And you also, in addition to the money, in addition to the trash that's picked up, it really is a tool for citizen involvement. Many of these people are retirees. They come from the community in which they literally adopt this stretch of highway, and they and their family and their kids and their friends and the people in their civic organizations do a great service. It's one of the reasons why Oregon looks a lot different from New Jersey, for example, is because of programs like this. Our main concern is one of the provisions in this bill would shift the costs to the volunteer individuals and civic groups involved in the program. We think that it might create a barrier towards participation in the program, and the cost to participate would be about an extra $450 per family or civic group or to an individual if they were sponsoring it. Also, the requirement to appear in person to pick up applications, when you look at some of the travel distances in central and eastern Oregon, that could possibly be a barrier to participation as well. But in sum, we're mostly concerned that the cost shift onto the individuals who are already volunteering to pick up the trash may significantly reduce participation, and by some estimates could even affect the future viability of the program. But again, we understand the context in which the bill was introduced. The department's not opposed to it. We just wanted to make the committee aware of our concern that the cost provision in particular might reduce participation in the program. And I'd be happy to answer the questions you might have.
Questions? Representative Byer.
I guess I wasn't that familiar with who pays on this program, but can you tell me if what you pay to these organizations is reimbursed or whether it's an upfront payment?
For Mr. Chair, for Adopt a Highway or
right.
For the Youth Litter Program?
For the Adopt a Highway.
The Adopt a Highway, Mr. Chair, Representative Byer, the Adopt a Highway Program, the cost of pretty much in terms of transportation, for example, if I adopt a stretch of highway, I pay for my own transportation. The department pays for things such as safety vests and that kind of thing. But for the Youth Litter Patrol, in contrast, that's a paid program for young people. The department provides transportation to and from the cleanup sites as well as the equipment, and that's where most of the costs are involved.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, we had another question. Was it you, Thatcher?
Yeah, it was me, but maybe more of a comment than a question, really. I'm just wondering if you had any issue with line 16 on the bill, where it says that the identity of the applicants would be provided to news media. Is it not now public record?
Mr. Chair, Representative Thatcher, it is public record currently. I mean, somebody could request it under the public record statute, and we would gladly turn it over.
Further questions? Yes, Representative Burley.
This may, this is probably an obvious answer, but I'll ask it anyways. The existing law says that the department may adopt any rules it considers necessary for implementation of the Oregon Adopt a Highway program.
Okay. Now, Mr. Burley, yes.
If this is important, why doesn't ODOT go ahead and amend its rules to include this stuff? We don't need a bill for this, do we?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, that's probably something the committee should answer. But yes, we do have the power to adopt these rules. We have been, I guess, both lucky and comfortable in the sense that we've not had an experience on the state highway system similar to what occurred in Marion County. But in terms of the civic involvement and then actually picking up the trash off the side of the roads, it's been very successful so far.
follow-up.
Just this is a comment. It is a very successful program, but I, you know, I've been on the ski patrol at Bachelor for 11 years, and we've adopted a section of road outside of Bend and do our cleanup every fall. But I can assure you that if we have to start paying for that, we'll be out of that program very quickly.
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, that was our concern as well with the bill.
Further questions or comments? Okay, Andrea, I may interrupt you because Representative Krupp may show up somewhere along the line.
Chair Gillen, members of the committee, Andrea Meyer, Legislative Director for the ACLU of Oregon. Okay, I'm not here today necessarily to oppose the bill, and I'd like you all to note that for the record. I think actually there's a fix that could happen. Looking at, and it's too bad the proponent's not here, because I think a proponent should be here to talk about the reasons and describe the various things they have in here. But on behalf of an organization, I wouldn't want someone who's not have the authority of the ACLU to go down and obtain the ability to put a placard up and collect on behalf of the ACLU. In fact, without, I'm pretty sure that the American Nazi Party indeed did not seek the opportunity to do that. It was someone who did not have the authority to speak for them. So I would think a fix would be similar to what you already have to do with a voter pamphlet statement. When you submit a statement on behalf of an organization, you attest to the fact that you are a representative of that organization with a civil penalty if you do not have the authority to do that. And I think that would put a neutral safeguard, and it would address, I think, any concerns and ensure that no one is speaking for anyone else in coming and representing that they represent that organization or that family or any other entity. But we do, I do have concerns about the language in here. And I think, Representative Thatcher, was it you who asked about the news media? I presume this is public record, but it appears to potentially provide an obligation on the department to actually affirmatively go out and try to figure out who's the news media and distribute it to it. And so I think it would have implications to the department, too, to fulfill that obligation there where it shouldn't happen. And then I think there is a burden shifting and potentially a heckler's veto on the requirement that an individual or an organization that's doing this be liable for any cost that's unlimited exposure. So with that said, that's my testimony.
Thank you, Andrea. Any questions?
Oh, well, I have a question. Half a minute. You didn't close it yet, did you?
Well,
maybe I'm happy to testify, not in totally opposition to something.
But maybe this question is more appropriately addressed by ODOT, but are there any rules that any rules that ensure that the group is a legitimate group, and how, I mean, I could just see somebody just trying to monkey with the system saying, okay, it's sponsored by the I Hate Whatever or Whoever Society. And
Chair Gilman, Representative Thatcher, I don't have the rules in front of me. I think we do. I think the programs run fine, and there isn't that problem. You do start getting into risks if the government's going to start assessing what is a legitimate group versus not. I think there is safeguards in terms of can you represent that organization, be it the ACLU or your family or anyone else, when you're not, you do not have the authority.
Thank you. I'm done.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Yes, Representative Byer.
And unfortunately, I don't think this is for you, but I'm curious if there are requirements now for how many times a year the road has to be picked up.
Would you please,
Chair Gilman, Representative Byer? I think that's a yes, but I can't speak to that.
He's looking for the answer. We'll get it. Welcome again, John.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the bill, first of all, says that that it needs to be that a volunteer group would apply to participate in the program has to remove litter along a designated stretch of highway on two separate occasions. ODOT also asks them to pick up these as well. And we also ask them to attend two safety meetings a year on top of it.
Two
safety meetings as well.
Mr. Chair, clarification?
That's
the two times a year they're required to clean the roadway? Or
Mr. Chair, Representative Breyer, that's correct.
And two safety meetings?
Yes, because of the obvious hazards of being on the highway.
Oh, thank you.
That's okay. We don't worry about that.
Any further questions?
Now I'm going to close the hearing on 28-30.
This has been great fun. Anything further to come before this meeting?
Can you just give us the update on our hearing, if there is any news?
Representative Burley. Is that the one you're talking about?
Right. Yeah. What sort of an update would you like? The agenda's going to be the school zone speed limit bills, the Smokey Fair license plate, and the safe route to schools bill. And it starts at 2:00.
2:00.
Friday.
In the Barnes room.
That's what I don't have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We put it on the agenda that's been posted. So if you have a copy of the posted agenda, the address is on there. I'm not. Is it the Deschutes County Courthouse, or does it have some other kind of?
No, it's not the courthouse. It's the new building. When you come in on the parkway, you'll actually can get off right next to it too. But it's right on the parkway. It's not the old courthouse. It's a new administrative building. When you come in the front door. Come in the front door and you'll go to the right down that hallway. You can't miss it. The board hearing room's right there.
And that's all on our agenda.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the street address. If you would like a map, we could get you a MapQuest type map for all of you to help you once you get in.
Once you get into Bend, we might run off the road if I'm looking at something like that.
Better not be alive.
Something simple like I-97, right on blah blah blah, or exit something.
Okay.
And that kind of easy.
I have a question. Will there be state transportation, or are we all required to get there on our own recognizance?
The impression I had up until now is that you were on your own recognizance. Mike and I have to take a cargo van with the sound system in it over there, and there's only room for the two of us plus the sound equipment in that van. So if we're going to arrange for a group of you to go, we're going to have to get a separate car and probably have one of you drive it.
Well, I'm going to head from Eugene that morning, so...
I am in my own car because I'm headed to Baker City the next morning quite early.
Okay. That's fine.
Which you're welcome to come to. It's a health committee meeting. You've got to listen to my books on tape.
But that commits you for Saturday, too.
And I understand that there's a Senate committee going to be in Bend that same day.
Right.
From
at 1:00 at the Lifewise building.
But the Senate president in attendance.
So you might be able to snag a ride if you want to go back and forth just a bit.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure enough. Any other questions? John, anything else from you?
No.
Mr. Chair.